Hi, everybody. Welcome, everyone, to the Art of Art Business. I'm your host, Jonathan Edward Goodman, the owner of Trigonal Gallery, along with my co-host, collage artist extraordinaire, Morgan Jesse Lappin. If you're watching this episode and not just listening to it as a podcast, you will notice several changes. First, my surroundings look different. I assure you, I am in the same location, just another spot. If you notice a low rumbling, that's because I'm having work done on my house. I know what you're thinking. Oh, look at him putting an extension on his house. I assure you that's not the case. It's quite the opposite, and it's seriously stressing me out. Second, don't adjust your screen if it looks like my hair has now gone from blood red to hot pink. Yes, the color is fading. No, I am not happy with it. With that said, let's introduce our two guest artists. We are very fortunate to have Elise Margolis and Hope Kroll on the show today. Elise studied with the artist Hannah Harari, who in the 1940s, along with painting, did collage. His was a mix of representational and whimsical elements, forming his unique collage work. Through him, she learned that abstract is the way for her to express her thoughts. She is inspired by the work of Stuart Davis. Elise's work about finding solutions, making order and creating unity, whether it is studying relationships to answer questions or playing with shapes to create a design. Elise's purpose is to ultimately make a piece that is visually interesting and thought-provoking. Welcome, Elise. And we have Hope Kroll. Hope's work explores the nature of the heart and mind in a way that is playful and yet insightful, calling up tenderness as well as terror and equal parts of rapture and repulsion. Kroll's work tirelessly seeks out the honey of wisdom through the masterful arrangement of images from old encyclopedias, medical textbooks, children's books, popular science, technical manuals, paper dolls, and antique photographs. Her use of a three-dimensional technique gives her paper constructions a surprising presence, a fusion of poetic surrealism and scientific paraphernalia. Many of Kroll's miniature works have intricately cut out in illustrations, all the way down to the individual hairs and blood vessels. Welcome both of you to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan. Hi, Morgan.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being with us.
Fantastic. Morgan, who should we start interviewing first?
Can I flip a coin?
Go ahead. These are
artists. I guess we'll start with Elise because me and Elise have known each other for a while. And she was actually part of the original conception of Brooklyn Collage Collective, which started in 2013 in Brooklyn. So we've done a lot of shows together, which is pretty awesome. Yeah, let's take a look at the works.
I am pulling up the pieces that we currently have on Artsy for the World Collage Day show. Let's take a look at these. Oh my goodness, I'm moving these faces around. Let's first look at these in terms of the three pieces together, because there is interconnectivity here. There are reused elements in all of these three pieces, and look, for me, Elise's work is magical and inspiring, and it evokes a tremendous amount of emotion in me. I recently spent time on Elise's website and really looked through her entire body of work, and it is really an exploration of movement and an emotion that is the type of artwork that you would put on your wall and continue to be drawn to it in the room. You know, if it was in the room, if it was in a dining room or in a living room, you know, these pieces kind of evoke so much emotion that an interior designer would see these and be able to, you know, I always kind of think of that Kroller advertisement where, you know, the you know, rich couple comes in with the faucet from the sink and says, I want you to design a house around this. And I feel that way with a lot of Hope Kroll's, a lot of Elise Margolis's work. I think that, you know, it's so inspiring that someone can go in and just say, I want you to take the elements that are in these pieces and design my living room for me. And I think it would work magically and wonderfully. It's incredible.
That's awesome. That's exactly how I live.
And they are behind you, right? One of the pieces is right behind you.
What? Yes. There's actually a fourth piece to this. These pieces are a story. I don't always create a story, but these four happen to be one particular story.
Can you share with us what that story is, or is it more personal?
Well, there were two, really it was during this past year when I felt very trapped and couldn't escape. And it really is something that, it's what you said is true. And thank you for acknowledging that or noticing that it is really all about emotion. They don't always evoke a specific picture, but it is an emotion where I felt, maybe in this one, it may look like a scream where I'm trying to say something, and which is always true in my work. I also, this was different for me because I normally work with a flat background or no background. And I had so much of this paper cut up, and I just felt that the ground was shaky. It wasn't together. I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel connected. And so that's how I started this series, with putting all of those, the backgrounds together first, not knowing what would come, what would come from that. But I knew I wanted to do something that wasn't solid, because it didn't feel like we were in a solid time. And then as everything else, I just look, Morgan, as you know, we have, and every collage artist will say this, we have thousands and thousands of pieces to look through. And that's what I do. I start with looking and what attracts me that day. I mean, I have some pieces that I've had for 10 years in my box, and I will just move it to the side knowing someday I will use that. I love it. I connect to that piece, but it's not for now. And sometimes I will create a shape at that moment. I never know. So for this one, there was a piece and it just jumped off the page. I think it might have been the first one. That whole piece was somewhere in my box. I was like, oh my God, this is perfect for how I feel today. And just put that on and the narrative starts right there. I saw what was happening. It was, I'm trying to get out. I understood what was going on. I said this to many artists. I create my work for me, really. I don't do this for somebody else. It is how I get what's inside out for me. My intention is when I'm making it, it's not for sale. I never think I'm going to want to give up any of my work. So it's really about, it's like a therapy. It's like, it helps me to work out what's going on inside. From this series after, it was an emotional release to be able to say, okay, now I understand, I am trapped here. This, I will have freedom at some point. I do feel like we're getting hopeful. Here's the one dance to live, what time will come. Just feeling like, what can I do? Sometimes I would just dance in my apartment. Just how do you feel good in this crazy, crazy time? And I know all artists say this too. All of my work has to do with how I am feeling at that moment. There is an emotional element attachment to every piece that I work on. It's not, you know, once in a while I'll make a pretty picture most of the time, and I'm glad when they come out that way, but most of the time there is a real reason why those pieces go together. And I don't always want to tell you what that is, because sometimes it's not, you know, I don't feel, I'd rather you try to figure it out for yourself, because I don't always feel that what I'm trying to say is, you know, it's very emotional, and it doesn't need to be that for you.
Right.
The purpose of it worked. It served its purpose for me.
So sometimes the explaining the art kind of puts a border around it, puts a fence around it. Once you understand what the artist was thinking, you're not able to incorporate your own emotions into it, right? So, you know, keeping it, understanding the period of time that you worked in it, right? So like, you know, Picasso's blue period, we understand, you know, now like why he was in that blue period, what had happened that had kind of changed his art style. For you, you know, knowing that these pieces were created in 2020 and what the world was going through, you know, and that's what's really, for me, owning Trigonal and looking at the art that is being produced in this, you know, pandemic and post-pandemic time is extremely reflective, right? You know, when we think about art history, we think about major changes in the way that the world is working, right? And I keep going back to Picasso because Picasso was amazingly in between World War I and World War II, a very, very tumultuous time in the world. And you see that reflected in Guernica, you see that reflected in the Blue Period, you see that reflected in his Cubism work and all of these things. And I think that what we're going to see is this post-pandemic and so pre, during, and post-pandemic are all going to have these elements of loneliness and despair and worry and just, you know, shock as to what has happened in the world.
That's what I always want to explain, because I don't necessarily want you to associate that with the piece. Maybe you think it's something else. So
I think that the time itself is it brings the story into the art piece just naturally. There is nobody who in 2020 maybe some artists were painting happy, silly portraits of, you know, Thomas Kincaid is gone. So, I mean, you know, maybe, you know, if you're redundantly creating the same pieces and you're not, you know, look, artists are incredibly emotionally tied to their art, right? And so you automatically get this change when there's a shift that occurs. And I think that, you know, look, I mean, I've looked at your other pieces and there is a shift in your work. There is a more serious note to what you're producing now. And whether you or another artist is conscious about it, the outside world, we are artists and we emote and we feel. And so it's impossible to look at the work that is being done in a post-pandemic era and not pinpoint the specific time and what was going on in the world.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, your stuff is brilliant. So I just wanted to mention as I was going through those that both Hope Kroll and Elise Margolis have their pieces up in OpenSea as NFTs. And we should explain what that means to people, because there's a lot every single day, and I'll explain it to Elise as well as we were texting back and forth most of the week and explaining it to her. You know, look, I used to explain to people blockchain as being Jeff Bezos getting in his car and driving across the country, writing up the business plan of Amazon. And I've realized that that isn't actually accurate. What it really is the day before Amazon was turned on, it was the stocking of the warehouse and the understanding of how you were going to move these books across country. That is where we are in terms of the blockchain and the NFT. We are simply stocking what is going on, right? Now look, you know, there are a couple of artists that, you know, for various, sometimes nefarious reasons, have sold their artwork on the high end. But at the end of the day, NFTs are going to be the starting point, or I should say, art NFTs are the starting point in a much larger Amazon change of the way that we do business. Everything in 10 years from now, everything you own is going to come attached with an NFT as proof of ownership. It is essentially, and I know this is probably upsetting a lot of people who invest in NFTs, it is your shopping receipt. It is going to the supermarket and you are receiving a receipt saying you bought these things. And that's what we are doing with these artists here, is that you can go in and you can buy the NFT, you could buy that receipt, or you can buy the physical piece. And regardless, either way, you get both elements. If you buy the physical piece, then you get the NFT. If you buy the NFT, you get the physical piece, because at the end of the day, they are the two together. They are the COA of the physical piece, of the ownership. And so it's great to have both of you putting your work up in the NFT market. I believe that, you know, we are at the point in e-commerce where people are going to start understanding this and realizing that all that the NFT is, and I mean, we all have heard, like, you know, somebody bought the Banksy NFT and then burnt the Banksy. It's a ridiculous concept. It's a misunderstanding of what's really going on. And I think that as people realize that this is just an element inside of a larger technological and sociological change in the way that we do business, they'll realize that they made a terrible mistake in destroying that artsy piece, that Banksy piece. So yeah. So Elise, tell us, you know, so I think I got the name wrong of your mentor. Can you correct me on that?
Hananiah Harari.
Hananiah Harari. And so is he based in New York? Is he around anymore? Okay. So he passed away. I also have, you know, artist mentors that have passed away. It's a, you know, very, very disheartening event when that happens, more so than when a family member passes away, because you really have such a tie to that mentor and the way that you do your work. For them to pass away, it's very hard on us. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with him and what he left you with, and all other artists that you have been affiliated with, how they have impacted your art.
Well, he was a teacher. He was a teacher of mine. He was, I would say, my first teacher. What, you know, I've been creating since I'm a child. I really just have always, I don't remember not drawing or painting. It was not something that I ever thought of as a career. I didn't know that what you could make a career out of it. I was just a kid painting. My parents had all of my paintings up in their house. It was really awesome. And it wasn't until later on, when I went to college, I moved into the city, and I was like, I really want to do something out of my house and connect to other artists. So I had worked in the music business for a long time and just said one day to my husband, I have to do this. I need some time for my art. And the music business was right near the Art Students League. And I walked out one day and went in and I looked through the catalog, and there was something that I connected to. And I went upstairs and there was, he must have been 5 foot tall with white hair and a little bow tie. And oh my God, everything you could even imagine, what you thought was an artist, he was standing right there. And I was petrified because I wasn't trained. I was just doing what I do. And I had all of my materials and I stood in the back of the room as far in the corner as you could get, so there could nobody behind me could see what I was doing. And I painted the portrait of this man sitting up there. And Mr. Harari went and took my piece off the easel and brought it around to the whole class and said, look what she's doing. And I was terrified. It was, I don't have to show my work. I love doing what I'm doing. A lot of my work goes into a box. It's not necessary. The act of doing it, the journey is what's important. So when he showed it to everybody, first of all, it was an incredible acknowledgement from somebody I really admired, and I saw his talent, so that he singled me out that day was pretty incredible. It's a painting that I have and that I will always have, in a special place in my house. And that was it. I took lessons from him for many years and from many incredible teachers, drawing teachers, life drawing, which I love. But it's not, I could paint portraits all day, but I'm not, that isn't inspiring to me, or at this moment. Sometimes it might be, but it may be in the future, but I found paper, and it just has really changed everything. It's very, I like to work, and it's easy. I don't have to open up paint. I open up a box, there's paper available. I can move it around. I don't have to commit. I can change it. There's so many wonderful attributes of working with paper. So that's where I am now. He was a realist. He hated Jackson Pollock. I love Jackson Pollock. He just did not understand how it had to have some representation. If it was abstract, you had to abstract reality.
Right.
I don't always feel that way. I sometimes feel that the abstraction is my reality, no matter what. So, he was just an incredible, he validated my work. And when I came into him with many years ago, I did word paintings, and those were the paintings that were on Friends, and I had some success with that. And I brought him these little drawings that I had done, and he said to me, it's a really great idea. And when he said that to me, when your mentor, somebody you really admire, says that, you run. So I ran with that, and I had a really run with those paintings for a long time.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'll tell you, I understand that apprehension, not only just, in art school, right? But everyone understands that I am on a mission to learn how to speak French. And I tried to get a tutor that I didn't know, and I got physically sick because, the video, like you're doing the video, and I just said, I can't. And I called a friend of mine and I said, could you be my tutor? He fluent in French, fluent in Arabic, all these different languages. And he said, yes. And we got on for the first video chat, the video lesson. And I said, I can't tell you how nauseous I am. I am so afraid. But in my heart, I know that outweighs the benefit of learning a second language that I just, it's the one kind of, there are two sticking points in my life, that I've wanted to hurdle and overcome. One was learning a second language, which as Americans, we don't even realize that, you go through high school and you take Spanish and you can say, donde está the stop sign? And, we're a disaster compared to the rest of the world that learns French and learns English and learns all these different languages. And, so it's such a, you have to, as an American, kind of move into your own space and make your own decisions on what you want to be educated in from as an adult, right? As a kid, we go through these processes and you have to go through high school and take exams and things like that. But when you really become an adult and you say, I want to learn more about this, and then you have a mentor that really, not only wants to work with you and see that you're going to grow, but also that you are moving and progressing in a way that is going to be beneficial, not just for you, but for everybody in the world. It's a wonderful thing to have a mentor. I mean, I had a photography mentor, and, you know, we still stay in touch. He's still teaching. It's very, very important. And I think that, you know, people who are teachers, they don't understand the value that having that one-to-one connection is, it can change a person's life as it did with you. So
I've had many mentors or many people that have inspired me. And so I'm very fortunate.
And being that you were in the music industry, you have creative people around you all the time. So, you know,
musician, I mean, I've traveled all over the world with him. It's incredible. We were always surrounded by artists. Art and music is basically our whole life. My son grew up, he's a musician also.
Amazing. Yeah. And you get that just from being around. It's the energy that is around you, right? It's one of the reasons why I created.
It's about, it's the need to create. It's the need to have, you have something to say and put it down, whether it be music or art or cooking or something. I mean, right. There are people that must do something to feed themselves.
Right, right. And you know, it's in the science and the maths too. There are, those are extremely creative. Yeah. So Hope, you, now we've talked about art and we've talked about collage, and you are almost the surgeon of collage, aren't you? Your intricacies and the wirings that you do and the cuts that you make are so incredible. And again, I know that we talked about this during the show opening, but again, you don't use an X-Acto knife, which, you know, the majority of us use. You use cuticle scissors.
I do. Right. I mean, I have to use the knife, the mat knife at certain points, because there's no way you can get a scissor into, you know, tiny little spots. But I just prefer the cuticle scissors. They just have a natural, curve. You can, you know, they cut along the edges so much nicer. I don't know. I just have an affinity for the cuticle scissors.
And you're fortunate that you have, you know, women's hands instead of man's.
Right, I don't have man's hands. The cuticle scissors fit my hands.
Right. Scissor you use all the time, or do you have many?
Oh, I have maybe 100 different cuticle scissors all over the world. Germany, Switzerland, you know, China, wherever. Wherever I see scissors, I pick them up, you know, flea markets, awesome. Wherever.
Oh, that's incredible. I didn't realize I was here thinking, right. Oh, I have one cuticle scissor. She must use this cuticle scissor on her.
There's all different kinds of designs. We need to, you know, fat ones, you know, straight, whatever. You know, so, there's a million different kinds.
Well, you know that you'll obviously be opening up a scissor museum at some point then, I guess. Why not?
At one show, I had all my cuticle scissors out on display so people can see them, what I use. Oh, wow. People are just like, they're like, what? You use cuticle scissors? Yes.
Yeah, that must be incredible to watch. Yeah. Let's take a look of your artwork and let's talk a little bit about it. Now we'll start over in Artsy, and these are the three pieces that you have in our show. And we should say that on your end, your NFTs are slightly different in that you've added
dialogue to them. Yes,
dialogue and animation to them, and so they have a little bit of a different. They are slightly different from the original pieces that you've created. This one is called In Plain Sight. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, I've had the end papers, that's the decorative paper behind the piece for a long time. And a friend had given me a 3-volume set of venomous sea creatures. And when I came upon the squid and octopus, I thought, oh my God, that completely matches those end papers. I have to use it. So this piece was all about you know, the color and the composition. And this particular portrait had a kind of an orange hue to it, especially her lipstick. And she's such a silly face. I just thought, oh, this is really a whimsical kind of piece to put those squid and octopus on. And in plain sight, you know, they're, you know, how octopus and squid use camouflage to hide. So I just thought that was a good match.
I didn't realize that octopus and squid were poisonous, or are they just, are they poisonous to fish and they're not poisonous to us? Or are we not able to eat certain octopus and squid that are poisonous? We just don't understand.
I don't think their flesh is poisonous, but I think they might use venom to kill certain fish. But I don't quote me on that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know if they're poisonous to people, but definitely to creatures.
And the overall tone, did you have to photo manipulate this, the coloring? Because it's incredible how you matched all of these perfectly.
Yeah, no, I never use scans or anything like that. This is all just the original paper.
Wow.
Just right, worked out right. That way.
Someone pointed out recently that we would be called purists.
Yes.
Someone pointed that out and actually yelled at me. They're like, you're making a big mistake. You should be scanning every piece that you have. And people like me and you know that if we tried to scan every piece that we had, we wouldn't be able to make the works that we make. That would take so much time. It would just be crazy for us.
Yeah. And a lot of times I find the same book over and over again.
Right.
I found the same wildflower book four times. And what's interesting about that is each volume has a different kind of printing color to it.
Right,
so one flower looks has a different print quality than the second book, the third book, and the fourth book. Same flower, but different colors.
Right, and, right, right.
You know,
that's true. So
if I use the same, if you see the same image showing up in a collage that I, of mine, it's because I found the book multiple times.
It's a fascinating surprise to see the difference in the prints from book to book, but right. Also for people like me and you, like that refuse to scan and print, just the hunt for the same book. And of course, it's very exciting to go to a physical place and see that there's one or two or three of that same book right there in that physical location. That's like a huge win.
Yeah, it's funny because
it just doesn't happen. And the material's becoming harder and harder to find.
Oh yeah,
Right.
You go to a used bookstore, it's like there's nothing. You know, it's very difficult to find. You have to do it once in line nowadays.
You know, that's something that, you know, as a collage artist, I never even really thought of.
Right.
Well, your collages, Morgan, your collages tend to come from the comic book and things that were produced more recently. But if you're talking about encyclopedias, I mean, encyclopedias haven't really been printed since, I don't know, the last one was probably 1978, 1979.
No, and they just write into the trash. People just throw them away. Or you have a lucky enough to go to like a library sale. And
those are just great. Like,
well, there's going to be trash. You buy them or there's going to be in the garbage, you know?
Well, think about all the stories about kids saying that my mom threw out all my comic books. So how about that one?
We should have a call out to the universe to, you know, hey, don't throw away your encyclopedias. Donate them to the Brooklyn Collage Collective or whatever it may be. You know, so that people don't. Although I'll tell you, you know, if you haven't thrown your encyclopedia out yet, you're rare. It's a rarity because I think a lot of people have thrown out a lot of those books.
Oh yeah, I've pulled a full set of World Book Encyclopedia out of the garbage in Brooklyn. I couldn't believe it. I called an Uber. I threw everything into the trunk of the car, and I just went right back to my house. Swear.
Yeah, I believe it.
That's a great find. That's a fantastic.
It was like, for me, it was like finding a thing of gold. I mean, I was that excited. I'm like, World Book Encyclopedia, my favorite.
Now this is called Hope of K. Is this Hope of K? Is that?
No, Portrait of K3.
Portrait of K3.
This is one of four I did of the, I kept finding this woman's portrait. I guess she did some glam shots or something. And I kept finding them in different antique malls here in Paso Robles. I kept finding her over and over again, and I just kept stockpiling her photos. And so I did a series of portraits with her, and each collage was done like this particular one, her like kind of looking off to the side, and it's like, what did that make me feel? And that's all her same image cut up within the tangle of all the surgical needles and surgical equipment and, you know, things like that. It's just her thoughts, you know, it's like her different reflections on herself and in that tangle that is her afro, or, you know.
Can I ask you, what is the background? This
is from a bound book of French magazines from World War I. Oh. So this particular paper is very thick, and the border around there, that would be another image of, let's say, a painting or a photograph. And it was just lightly tacked on to the back. And all I do is tear it off, and I kind of sanded off the glue part. But so this would have been an artwork would have been framed in here in a magazine. And so all these magazines wound up in a bound copy. And it was just, it's fascinating. I mean, I don't read French, but it was fascinating to, it's like a historical little, you know, snapshot of what was going on in France and the mindset during World War I.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Now, and it gives me like a little bit of a vibe of Metropolis for some reason, just of the robotic woman, and also just like a little vibe of like, just like Twilight Zone, just like this robotic woman, the way that it's, you know, attached to her neck. That part right there for me is really amazing, how it becomes robotic. And it almost looks like it was just basically pulled from the body a few minutes before, you know.
Did you ever see that horror movie where it just the woman's head survived the crash and they kept her head in a tray?
And which movie was this?
I can't remember the name of it, but she was involved in some accident. Her husband and some scientist saved just the head. And
it reminds me of Reanimator. I don't know if any of you ever saw the horror movie in the 80s, Reanimator, with a guy.
Yeah, I saw Reanimator. I prefer H.P. Lovecraft's stories.
Nice.
They've never done a good interpretation of his books yet. So
yeah,
I know. I know what you're talking about visually. I know what that movie was. I can't remember the name of it. I totally get now what you're talking about. I think what is funny, you know, we went to Morgan and I went to the Affordable Art Fair yesterday. Here in New York City. And, you know, so I have one pet peeve, and the pet peeve is that if you're a painter, I should never see the weave of the canvas, right? It's just something that drives me bananas. It's just a technical issue. And I think that it's very, very interesting when you apply it to other art, right? When we get outside of canvas, I do find weaves, particularly Elise, your the texture of your pieces and seeing the choice of the background here is beautiful, but it is, you know, it is part of the piece, right? It is specific to the piece. You didn't just go ahead and create the collage and then find something. You specifically searched out that type of fabric. And Elise, I mean, your stuff is incredibly, you know, the touch and the texture and the feel of it, you know, you get this, that in itself is part of emotion. And I know, Elise, you just kind of looked at me like, what? There's a problem with the weave in the canvases? it's a personal thing.
You know, sometimes you want that to come through.
It depends. It depends on what the subject matter is sometimes, or the style. But I mean, even for me, there are certain pieces where you could tell that they did try to make it really opaque and they just didn't quite get there.
Yeah, it's a technical thing. I think that when you look at, you know, when you look at masterpieces, right? When you look at John's, or you look at Calder's work, or all of these, you know, really incredible things, or even the splash artist you were just talking about. Oh my goodness, I apologize. Pollock. Also, what's that?
Pollock's were all canvas.
They are, but the weave is eliminated.
No, that's not true.
You know, I went to an exhibition of Frida Kahlo's work in Reno, Nevada once, and I was astonished to see bits of brush and dirt and just all kinds of stuff in the painting. It was kind of shocking because you see it in a book, or you know, it's pristine.
Right.
When you see it in person, There's a lot more going on there.
Huh. I will have to do more research, and I will have to, when the MoMA is open again.
Let's go to the museum together.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I would love that. That would be fantastic. Yes, we'll take a look at that. Okay, so continuing on, the other piece that you have, Hope, that is in the show is this one, which is a little creepy. As it loads up, l'imposteur, the imposter.
So this is also, the decorative end pieces from a book.
Right, and those are amazing.
Yeah, and also that's from the same, venomous underwater creatures. And that picture was sent to me by an author, Chris Schofield, and a series of passport photos that she'd sent me that she thought I would like and can use. So, and I think they were Eastern European, they had that feel to it. So I think that's why this is just such a somber portrait. Mm-hmm. And
is the hands, the claws, the same creature?
Oh, everything. Yeah. The antennas, everything. It's all the same creature. Wow. Who's also, I guess, a venomous crab. But I think that's a girl actually, but it looks kind of androgynous now, the face, which that's why I always like to remove the hair, because it just gives the whole personality of the portrait just a different feel to it. It's like, is that a boy? Is it a girl? I don't know. It's androgynous now.
Sorry, John.
Go ahead, Morgan.
No, I actually wanted to talk about, because a big part of a lot of your piece is the fact that there's space between the clips and the backing piece. Mm-hmm. Could you explain to us how you get that effect?
Well, I just lift everything up with foam core. Now, it's very delicate. I don't glue the whole piece onto foam core and then cut it out. It's just paper, and in certain key spots, it's lifted up with foam core. And in that way, as in the last piece, I could put a lot more information in it, and get it much more frenetic look to it, when I can shove pieces underneath and just kind of fill the space that way. But this one's, obviously more simple, but.
Right, so yeah, is this under glass?
Yes.
It is under glass.
Everything has to be under glass and in shadow boxes, because it's extremely delicate.
Right.
It's just kind of like, I use as little glue as possible. It's just gently laid down and, so it's extremely delicate.
And is there dimension to this? Is there depth between the background and the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is very slight, but in some collages, I've gone as much as 2 inches off the background.
Wow.
And, those are much larger pieces. But yeah, I mean, anywhere from a half an inch to 2 inches, it just anywhere in between.
Wow. We met an artist yesterday at the Affordable Art Fair who takes glass bowls and attaches them to the paintings that he does. I was like amazed, because how can you have like a glass like on canvas? And, he was talking about the fact that he uses resin and he attaches it with resin. And I said, but oh my goodness, these must be so heavy. How do you attach them to the wall? How do you hang? How do they just not fall?
I used to work with resin. And before I got into working with collage, I've been doing collage for 21 years. Before I did that for about 10 years, I was working with resin. Uh-huh. And I was taking books apart. It was still working with books, taking the books, cutting them into frames, cutting through the books, cutting the covers, stacking pages. And again, working three-dimensional, getting the pages to come up off the wall. And yes, they're extremely heavy to work with.
Wow. And,
but yeah, I had to, had a health issue, and I decided to stop working with any kind of toxic materials whatsoever. And it was kind of hard, because after working with sculpture and doing all this, resin work and things like this, it took me a year to discover collage and work with it. Instead of using the body of the book, it's like, oh, open it up, use the images from the books and just start working like that. Wow. And it started off as simple as just having a book, the blank piece of paper from the book and one image on it. And I'm like, you know, that's what I want to do. And I just started from there, just started very simple. I work extremely simple, and now everything is much more complicated, bigger, and just a lot more information in each collage now.
And can I ask you, when we're looking at this, so we obviously have the that background that is similar mm-hmm. to the first piece that we saw. And right. then up at the top and down at the bottom, is that also kind of that French book, that green?
No, this is the tape. See, if you want to, this is the tape that would be glued to the book. So I just got a little bit of the tape. That would be part of the binding in there.
Right,
too.
Right.
Oh, I see. So it's
all. So it's the two pages.
Oop. Right.
It's or like, not pages, sorry, the book back, the front cover and the back cover. Right.
Well, the end paper, the decorative papers. Not, right. they're not, it's not the cover, it's the decorative.
Oh, it's the inside paper. Of the front and back. Yeah. Got it.
So it's like, I want to make sure I understand this. So we used to have like, you know, hard-covered books that would yeah. be wrapped, you know, in kind of like a fabric. And yeah. then in the inside, there would be another, like this background. Is that so in other words, you took that hardcover book, that book front, remove that, and then put the collage on top of that.
Well, when you open a hardcover book, there's, you know, a series, there's a blank page, and then there's, you know, information about the book and whatnot. But so in really older books, there's these, you get these marbled pages, and it's just, you know, the hardcover, and then the first, usually it's the first page that you, right. you know, is a decorative page, but right. it's not part of the book cover itself, though.
I see. So those two elements, did they come from the same book?
No, this okay. is a different book.
Okay, so it's a hardcover backing of the book plus the design element of the green and then the collage on top of that.
Yes.
Very complex, yeah. Very complex. Very cool. And then let's look at the OpenSea. We've got these on OpenSea as NFTs. And obviously the bonus is that there is an animation to this. So we're going to play. Let's see if we can hear these. If I click in.
What is needed when speaking of stars sheds itself? The leaf green shadow of your hands gathers it. Gladly I bite off nugget after nugget of fate.
Interesting.
That's Raina Maria Rilke poem. And that's my voice, but obviously at a different pitch.
Oh, did you change
one of my favorite poets?
Oh, wow. And you purposely changed the pitch?
Yes.
Good. Wait, I've
make it a little, because I thought her voice, you know, she seems like she would have a higher voice.
Right. Let's take a look at this.
This one is from The Shining.
Come in here. You hear me typing.
It brings such a completely different element to the piece. And then you call it the imposter, which is so in tune with what's going on in The Shining.
Right.
You know, this guy's life is falling apart. Well,
he's being taken over by the spirit of the house. He's just the shell of a person.
You know, there's The Shining is a fascinating book and movie, right? There are these elements. What I always find interesting about Stephen King is that everything that he writes is kind of explainable, right? And, you know, a lot of people, I think The Shining, the movie, does a very good job of it, kind of questioning, is this a man who is being possessed by a house, or is this a man who is suffering from writer's block, alcoholism, abuse, and the loneliness that is brought in from the house itself, the mansion itself, is kind of evoking this, you know, because think about it, like when you have an artist block, or when I have a writer's block, sometimes you do just like, you're supposed to write what's in your head. And if it's the same thing over and over and over again, until you kind of break that chain of writer's block, it's maddening, right? And you have this, and so I always found The Shining to be very interesting, because on the one level, it could be supernatural, but on the other hand, it really kind of talks about, you know, abuse and alcoholism.
Right. And he just kind of steps back into that, even without having had a drink or no drink, you know, available to him, he still knows what his alcoholic self was like.
Right. And there's that withdrawal, right? So, you know, the idea that he goes into the bar and there's a bartender, so, you know, that's almost withdrawal, right? When you're, when you're, you know, addicted to something, and I don't have like a very good experience with this, but I've taken nearly every drug in the world. So I have some experience with, hey, don't do that anymore. So you kind of get these callings and these feelings that are outside of the physical, and you just have this head in, you know, a voice in the back of your head saying like, hey, let's go do that again. And you have to kind of like have this conversation that, you know, no, maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. Let's hear this one.
Street. And you see a wounded bird in the grass. What's your first thought?
It's vulnerable. I want to help it.
My first thought is also that it's vulnerable. And yet, I want to crush it. Walking down the street.
Now that, you said, was from your favorite TV show?
Hannibal.
Hannibal. Which
went for three seasons with Mads Mikkelsen and Hugh Dancy. Never saw it?
I have not.
It's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty. The music, it's stunning visually. And I don't know. I'm a fan of horror. And I think he does the best Hannibal Lecter ever.
I scare easily. So I tend not to watch, horror movies.
I'm drawn to that. As you can see, that element comes out in a lot of the collages that, you know, I'm drawn to the horror. And Hannibal, you shouldn't watch it because it's pretty visceral.
There was a show on Fox in the early days of Fox, and I think it was called Median. Is that right, Morgan? Is that,
I don't know if I remember
David,
that one.
David Carradine's brother, Peter Carradine. And I couldn't even make it through. Look, sometimes I wasn't even able to watch a lot of what's that one where
the first few episodes of the first season of Black Mirror definitely gave me panic attacks. I don't know about anybody else, but
yeah,
I can't believe that NBC got away with half the stuff that they did with Hannibal. I mean, it was on a regular, it should have been on cable. That it was on regular television was shocking, but the stuff that they got away with, very nice.
And that was the actress that was in that is the one from the I believe spaceship story. What was that?
You mean the UFO?
Yeah.
Now you're
what was that called? With David Duchovny.
Right.
X-Files?
I know what you're talking about, the UFO.
X-Files.
Yeah, right, that's right, X-Files.
That too was too scary for me.
Actually, just bringing up horror, I didn't realize Creepshow had like their own like episodes. It's kind of like Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, yes.
Like a cheaper version, but there's one episode, Hope, where it's based on a story about a house like yours in the back.
Oh yeah,
the toy house. Yeah, I'll tell you which episode after, because you definitely have to watch it. But yeah, I am a big fan of those houses, and that's a beautiful one at that. And I know that you have a little miniature TV that you have a controller that can actually with a flashcard where you can put these images on this little TV and you can actually change through the images.
Right, right.
Yeah, that thing is awesome. That I saw that.
Did when you get posted one? That.
I didn't get one. I did. It's a little expensive. I think it's like,
$90. Yeah, $90 or something like that.
$90, but man, that thing is cool. But yeah, that is so creepy. I love it.
And it
you
came
even
with
got the front lawn and everything.
Japanese,
look at that.
It came with Godzilla and little Japanese commercials, and that was creepy on its own. I don't add anything. It was
just right. Morgan, yeah, that is beautiful.
As we wrap up, do we have any comments or questions? Do you have all those?
I don't. Okay. I don't see. It's not showing up on my. It's just not showing up.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do some experiments at some point.
There is an upgrade that I'm looking at beyond the caster has an upgrade that I think would allow us to kind of manage everything from one location. So,
that would be awesome.
Well, I'm excited because it has to go into the budget and we'll have to figure all that
right,
out.
Right, right, right.
So everybody, so I just want to thank you both again, Elise Margolis and Hope Kroll. This has been a fantastic interview. Thank you so much for joining us on a Sunday. I don't know how it is over by you, Hope. It has gone from 50 degrees on Monday to 90 degrees on Sunday
it
here.
It sure has.
Wow, you're hotter than we are right now here in California.
It's very hot, and New York is smelly most of the time.
Remember, I'm in Bushwick.
Right, so it's even smellier.
Oh my God.
And people are even stranger. When,
it's just that you don't realize that like smells could smell like that.
It's, you know, we've all been inside and for a very long time. And now that we're outside, I'll tell you, I just want to point this out. It took a pandemic for New Yorkers to be excited about eating in the street.
Yeah, there you go.
the idea that you go up to the maitre d' and say, I would like to sit next to where the buses run.
Right.
But you and I had a meal outside next to in the street, and then last night I had another meal in the street, and I said the only way that this could have happened and this be acceptable both from a cultural New Yorker and from a political safety and hazard situation is through a pandemic. And now the interesting thing is it's probably going to stay around for a little while. I think that the restaurants, Elise, what do you think?
I love it.
I don't mind it either.
Because especially now, I've been inside for a year and a half. I do not want to go out from in my house to in someplace else.
Right.
Right.
To be outside for a very long time. I sat outside in 20 degree weather eating in a hut with a blanket and heaters. I just had to get out. I love it.
Yeah. I will just say that last night I was at Park Avenue Tavern, and I had the seat next to the fire hydrant. And I said, the friend that was with me said, it's just a matter of time as we're eating before a dog comes by and has to pee on that fire hydrant. And I said, yeah, no, I'm completely aware of that. And sure enough, you know, a parade of pets, but it's part of New York. It's part of the smells of New York. It is, you know, what we've got going on here. And look, I mean, things are getting much better. We're all able to go out now. You know, knock on wood, the next 14 days are going to be very, very critical for New York. If our numbers continue to go down, we will have really beaten this thing. And it is remarkable when we look at it in terms of history to within a year to have, you know, gone from hundreds of thousands of people that have died to being able to go back to a semi-normal life. So it's very, very exciting. Thank you both for joining us. We love doing these Sunday shows, even though I'm sure many of us would rather be at the beach or outside. I really appreciate you coming in and doing this for us. And the World of Collage Day runs for the rest of the month of June. Where are we?
May.
Thank. We have the LGBTQ show coming up starting June 1st. We will have a, for the first time, we will have a physical show opening in Brooklyn for the show the first week of June. We will then be moving that gallery show to Jersey City, to a location, a storefront in Jersey City. And we will, of course, be doing a Zoom open house, and we will be talking to all of the artists. So please stay tuned for that. All of the artwork that is currently in the World Collage Day is still available on Artsy for the next 5 months. So please go take a look at that. Thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, have a fantastic day.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.